This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Umar Pagan Ampake Pagan. Seven people have been killed in central London after three men drove a van into pedestrians on London Bridge and launched a knife attack on people enjoying a Saturday night out in pubs and restaurants around Borough Market. This marks the second attack in as many weeks to hit the UK, this time coming a mere 5 days before a contentious general election. Joining me this morning is philosopher, author and master of the New College of the Humanities in London, Professor A.C. Grayling. So, Anthony, first up, are you and your family well and safe?
Yes, we're all safe. In fact, I'm not in London at the moment. I'm at the Hay Literary Festival, but I've been in touch with the family and all well.
These London attacks happening so quickly after Manchester, I think this is the first time in a long time, probably since the IRA, that we've seen subsequent attacks happen in such quick succession. Am I right?
Yes, it is. And my guess is as follows, but of course I'm speaking from a very amateur point of view here, not knowing what the details are for the security services themselves. But you will notice that because of the success of the security services, it's very hard for people who want to commit terrorist atrocities to get guns or explosives. I mean, somebody managed to put together a homemade bomb for the Manchester atrocity, but it looks like it's very difficult for these people to be able to do that. So they're using vans to crash into pedestrians, and they're using knives instead. And evidently, the fact that there has been increased alert after the Manchester attack, it went up to severe and it's gone back now to sort of serious level, probably go back to severe again today, that probably meant that with the increased surveillance of people who are under suspicion, they're bringing their attacks forward rather than waiting for a later occasion in case they get arrested first. So I think one possibility is that we're seeing the people who want to do bad things feeling under pressure and having to hurry up a bit.
So talk to me about what the reaction is on the ground, especially following Manchester. I was in London during the 7/7 attacks, and I remember, you know, this isn't something Londoners are unused to, and they are incredibly resilient.
They are indeed. London, you know, has had quite a long history, going back even before the bombing in the Second World War, of, you know, various kinds of activism. And certainly as a result of the IRA and as a result of the 7/7 attacks and so on, what we've learned about London is that it, you know, it is very, very resilient, and its attitude is a very interesting one because, in many ways, it's a very positive one. Naturally, we're tremendously, tremendously upset for the victims and for their families. It's horrible when this kind of thing happens. I mean, you know, I don't even think that the word terrorist ought to be used. These are just murderers. And a murderer doesn't just kill a victim. It kills all the people who knew and loved and were friends with and family of the victim, because for the rest of their lives, they have that memory. But at the same time, London is a very diverse city. It's very cosmopolitan. Lots of different communities here. It's a city which welcomes refugees. It welcomes people from all around the world. The level of you know, sort of racism and hostility towards foreigners is much lower in London than, you know, in other parts of the world, and certainly other parts of the UK. And so, you know, the immediate response is solidarity, is a feeling we're not going to be, you know, pushed around. We're not going to change the way we live. We're not going to let this frighten us. And there was a report on CNN earlier today saying London is reeling from another terrorist attack. And in the Twitter sphere, people said, no, we don't reel. You know, we're able to put up with this kind of thing, and we're not going to let it get us down. But it does make us angry.
You have an election coming your way in just 4 days. And I think that these attacks make for a very interesting dynamic in that situation, because In a lot of ways, this election was going to be make or break for Theresa May. It was mostly going to be surrounding immigration and Brexit. Does this throw in a new factor?
Well, do you know what? I just don't think so. I mean, if the people who've committed these atrocities had anything as sophisticated in view as trying to alter the outcome of the election in one way or another, and quite what way that would be. I mean, it's very difficult to work out or to read what such an intention might be. But the issues at stake in the election are much, much more than Brexit and immigration. And oddly enough, Brexit and immigration have played a relatively minor role in the election because, you know, people are worried about the NHS, people are worried about the impact on the economy of Brexit, yes, but the impact on the economy has been something associated with Conservative policy for the last few years. So there's a lot more at stake, and I would be very, very surprised indeed if there were any changes of mind as a result of these incidents in Manchester and London, because already the direction of travel of the polls, for example, shows that Theresa May has made a disastrous mistake in calling an election now. She did it on the back of what looked like a huge Conservative lead. But there is a possibility. There is a possibility that there's going to be a hung parliament. And if that were to happen, that would be a game changer because, you know, the anti-Brexit movement is on the rise. People are really fed up with the kind of austerity measures that have been imposed in the last few years. And there's a great deal of concern about public services and especially about the National Health Service. So, you know, you could see that there's a kind of tumult of thinking politically. And it may be also very hard to read the future, of course, given the political tribalism in this country. But it's not impossible that there might be a reconfiguration in the political landscape after the election also. So I don't think that these attacks will make a difference. In 2 or 3 or 4 days' time, the day that the polling starts, you know, these attacks, of course, they leave a wound in the collective psyche, but not so deep and not so toxic that people are going to be deflected from them, from what they're thinking and what they want to do now.
It's very interesting because every time a national security issue arises, say, in the United States, the pendulum kind of swings towards the Republicans, who are often considered to be a lot stronger on these kinds of issues. Is there any sort of thing like that in the UK between the Conservatives and the Lib Dems and Labour?
I think in the past, yes. Although now, of course, the debate has changed. A lot of people think that we would probably be more secure if we stayed in the EU and collaborated with our EU partners on security measures and policing. There's been some debate, not really enough, about the impact if a Brexit were to happen on what would the outcome be for those you know, security partnerships across Europe. But again, if you look at the social media sphere, you see people saying the Tories traditionally have always been very strong on security from the point of view of nuclear weapons, Trident, the armed forces. But Theresa May is under a lot of attack for having reduced policing numbers in the country by 20,000. Not Theresa May personally, but the Conservative governments over the last few years. 20,000 fewer policemen on the streets, and the police have been arguing that this is a security risk. So this could really backfire rather badly on her if people were to take this as an issue. But, you know, the consciousness that people have of the risks you run and the costs you pay for living in a free, open society with freedom of movement, with not you know, having a curfew, with not having armed police on every street corner. And I think that this is a sufficiently grown up, a sufficiently mature country not to want to go too far down that route. And so the security issue, although it matters, and it matters in both ways, both on the large scale, the sort of Trident nuclear weapon scale, but also on the policing scale, I think that that issue is something which all political parties have to step up on. And it's not going to be a game changer in the election, I don't think.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there is this notion, which was echoed by the London mayor when he was elected, that this might be an everyday reality that we have to face, and we need to decide how much of our civil rights we're willing to sacrifice.
This has been a, you know, debate even before the 9/11 atrocities in New York and Washington, in fact, because I remember when the Labour government earlier in the century was contemplating putting biometric data identity cards into everybody's pockets and getting people to pay for them also. There was a big civil liberties campaign against it, and wrote a pamphlet for the civil liberties organization Liberty, which was sent to all MPs and members of the House of Lords, pointing out the argument so well put by Lord Acton more than 100 years ago, which said the first duty of a state is to protect the liberties of its citizens, not to protect their security. But the Home Secretary here, man called David Blunkett, and all the interior secretaries around the EU had signed a joint letter to the International Herald Tribune saying it is the first duty of government to protect our security. And it isn't, you know, it should say, look, we pay a price, we have a risk, but it's so much more valuable to preserve our liberties than to curtail them by becoming afraid of what what terrorism can do, because then you give the victory to the terrorist.
Anthony, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for talking to me today.
Oh, great pleasure.
I've been speaking this morning to Professor A.C. Grayling. The Morning Run continues after this on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.